But what's the universe at time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Syria's foreign minister says his country is ready to participate in peace talks in Geneva without any foreign interference, although he did not specifically explain what that means. The announcement comes almost a week after the United Nations Security Council approved a plan for international Syrian peace process aimed at ending its civil war. Walid Mualim spoke with reporters on a visit to Beijing.
Syria ready to participate in the Syrian dialogue in Geneva without any foreign interference, and our delegation will be ready as soon as we receive a list of the opposition delegation.
Foreign Minister Mualim also said his government hopes the dialogue will be successful in helping Syria establish a national unity government. Syrian activist groups say raids by government warplanes on a rebel-held suburb in the capital Damascus killed at least 20. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says women and children were among the casualties. It happened in Thursday's raids on the suburb of Hamouria. The United Nations says a decision by the Central African Republic to postpone next week's elections by 3 days is not a setback for the struggling country. UN spokesman Stefan Dujarric says the UN peacekeeping mission will help authorities distribute ballots and back the CAR forces with security. Voting for president and parliament were scheduled for Sunday but have been delayed till Wednesday, December the 30th. This is VOA News. Belgian authorities have charged a ninth suspect in connection with last month's terror attacks in Paris. The man, identified only as Abdullah C., a Belgian national born in 1985, was arrested Tuesday in Brussels. The arrest was kept secret to avoid alerting potential accomplices. The November 13 attacks in Paris left 130 people dead and more than 300 injured. Iraqi forces are battling the last Islamic State militants holed up in the center of Ramadi as they fight to retake the key city they lost 7 months ago. In the third day of a major Iraqi offensive, fighting raged Thursday around a government complex in Ramadi, which is the capital of Iraq's Anbar province. Iraqi military officials say IS terrorists are trying to slow the Iraqi advance by using suicide bombers, booby traps and snipers, plus civilians as human shields. More than 100 extremists are believed to be fortified in the city center. Afghan officials are saying security forces backed by U.S. airstrikes have regained control of a district center in southern Helmand province, regained from the Taliban. Officials saying at least 45 Taliban fighters were killed. Sadiq Siddiqui is a government spokesman.
We also were able to provide ammunition and support to our forces in Sangin. The fight is still going on in Sangin. There are areas in which the Taliban are still there and they're fighting against our forces. But at the same time, we will be launching other operations in other parts of the Helmand as well.
U.S. military spokesman confirmed to VOA that U.S. aircraft are participating in the fighting. New violence erupted in the West Bank on Thursday. Three Palestinian attackers were shot dead as they carried out stabbings and a car ramming, and a fourth was killed in clashes with Israeli soldiers. Ongoing unrest and overshadowing Christmas Eve celebrations in the Palestinian-ruled town of Bethlehem. Turnout was sparse, as we hear from Robert Berger.
Palestinian Boy and Girl Scouts kicked off Christmas celebrations with a march through Manger Square here in the West Bank town of Bethlehem. But the atmosphere is gloomy. 3 months of Israeli-Palestinian violence have scared pilgrims and tourists away. Palestinian merchants sat in their shops packed with olive wood souvenirs, but customers were few and far between. Robert Berger, Bethlehem.
And get more news at our website, voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, December 25th. It's Christmas Day. And here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's military says it is committed to implementing security arrangements under the current peace agreement.
There is no other division within the army. The army made their point very clear more than 2 months ago that they are behind the peace agreement and they will implement the peace agreement.
Colonel Philip Aguo is South Sudan's military spokesman. Zimbabwe opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai blames President Mugabe for the country's faltering economy. Central African Republic postpones Sunday's election to December 30th, and Nigeria's president says his government has technically won the war against Boko Haram.
So what he said is technically they have lost the war because they are no longer in a position to mobilize and carry out the kind of attacks that enable them to seize territory, hold towns, and they take captives and they seize foodstuff and things like that. They have been reduced to suicide bombings.
Garba Shehu is the senior special assistant on media and publicity to President Muhammadu Buhari of Nigeria. We'll examine the ups and downs of African democracy in 2015. And a Malawi prison band is nominated for a Grammy Award. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan's military spokesman says the army is committed to the full implementation of the security arrangement under the peace agreement signed August between President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. The commitment comes despite local reports that sharp disagreements in the army leadership could imperil the peace accord and plunge the country into yet another conflict. But Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguo tells reporter Peter Clotty that the Sudan People's Liberation Army will not hinder the implementation of the agreement.
That is a false statement. The army is fully committed for the peace and implementation of the peace agreement. There is no other division within the army or within the command of the army. The army takes it as orders from the civil authority of the democratic elected government of South Sudan. So there is no other division within the army. The army made their point very clear more than 2 months ago that they are behind the peace agreement and they will implement the peace agreement.
Are you therefore saying that there shouldn't be any doubt whether the peace deal signed between the country's warring parties, President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar, will hold? There shouldn't be any doubt?
Definitely on our side as an army, the SPLA is 100% behind the peace agreement. And the implementation will go as we are concerned. If there are spoilers for the peace agreement, those spoilers are not at least on our side.
A military official is quoted as saying he expects a lot of challenges and resistance in the security arrangement to withdraw forces 25 kilometers outside Juba due to some of his colleagues opposing to immediately withdraw while other hardliners totally oppose the whole arrangement.
Completely, that is a false report. What has happened is that the army has already demarcated the 25 kilometers outside Juba, and what was left was the provision of water and shelters for the soldiers. And if that is provided, definitely the soldiers will move where they are supposed to move to.
Colonel Aguero, last month your army announced that it had withdrawn from Juba about 250 soldiers. However, there are several thousands that have continued to remain in the nation's capital, contrary to the security arrangement. How is the army explaining this?
The army is ready to implement, and we invited even the IGAD to send their members to come and monitor and witness the withdrawal from Juba, and the IGAD did not send their members. The tank unit was supposed to move out, but the command decided that it's better. It is this process to be witnessed by the regional forces that are monitoring and mediating the peace agreement. So we were waiting for IGAD members, the officers that are in Juba, to monitor the withdrawal from Capitan. There is nothing, nobody against it, and it was even a plan of the army before the conflict. The army had a plan before to move outside Juba.
Colonel Philip Aguo is the spokesman for South Sudan's military. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the South Sudan capital, Juba. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says his country has technically won the war against Boko Haram in comments issued days before his self-imposed deadline for defeating the militant group. Mr. Buhari had given his military a mandate to defeat the terrorist group by December 31st this year. Critics have said the president's mandate is unrealistic given the fact that Boko Haram continues to carry out suicide bombings. Garba Shehu is Senior Special Assistant on Media and Publicity to President Buhari. He says Boko Haram has been driven out of most of the territories it once controlled and is no longer in a position to launch the kinds of attacks that have enabled it to seize territories.
When he took power, 14 of the country's 774 local governments were effectively under the control of Boko Haram. As we speak now, what he's saying is that two of the three states that had been inflicted with Boko Haram, Adamawa and Yobe, had been rid of their menace. Borno State, which is the epicenter, has been rid of Boko Haram in all but two or three local council areas. These are areas quite very close to Lake Chad, and the military forces are closing in upon them. So what they're saying is technically they have lost the war because they are no longer in a position to mobilize and carry out the kind of attacks that enable them to seize territory, hold towns, and take captives and seize foodstuff and things like that. They have been reduced to suicide bombings.
Shehu, that's exactly what I want to ask you. How do you technically win when Boko Haram continues to rain fear on the Nigerian people, as you mentioned, through suicide bombing?
Well, even that, you know that it is much reduced. You don't have a situation in which any country anywhere in the world can promise that there would be no crime in their territory. So it would, unfortunately, with the terrorism these days, terrorism is global and it's a present reality. It lives with us, and that it will take a lot more time to remove from our own space. We don't know how long it will take. Terrorism is a factor of social life, not only in Nigeria, but all over the world, and it will require efforts collectively at the local level, collectively at the international level, in order to reduce its menace.
Compared to President Buhari's predecessor, Goodluck Jonathan, can your government say that you took the war to Boko Haram more than the previous government did?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Because for 6 years, Mr. Jonathan allowed Boko Haram to fester. Look, when it started, it was a street protest inside Maiduguri. People thought that it would have taken, you know, water hoses to disperse at the protesters. And they just folded their arms and watched this thing grow. And they established international tentacles. Obviously, you know that the world was alarmed that Boko Haram, the day they affiliated themselves to ISIS, that meant more trouble for the region. So all of this happened under the watch of Mr. Jonathan. But happily enough, Mr. Buhari campaigned on the promise of securing this country. Without security, you cannot achieve any meaningful development in Nigeria.
Shehu, do you think President Buhari, or do you think he has any regrets for giving that, I don't know whether it was an ultimatum to the military or to security forces to get rid of or to make a dent with Boko Haram by the end of this year? Because there's some people who say that was not a realistic promise.
All military campaigns are not open-ended. Military campaigns must have deadlines. Otherwise, they will continue to go on and on and on without end. So the deadline of December 31st was never intended to be cast in stone. It's simply an objective. And the important thing is, by that time, achieve this result. And the president is saying, technically, Boko Haram has been defeated.
Garba Shehu is the Senior Special Assistant on Media and Publicity to President Muhammadu Buhari of Nigeria. He was speaking with me from Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, December 25th. It's Christmas Day. And we want to wish you, our listeners, Christians and non-Christians alike, a very Merry Christmas. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. In Zimbabwe, main opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai of the Movement for Democratic Change says President Robert Mugabe and his government are to blame for the country's faltering economy that has seen mass closures of companies and workers and prisoners going months without their pay or bonuses. Zimbabwe government officials were not immediately available for comment. In this interview with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service, Mr. Tsvangirai says policy inconsistencies and infighting within the ruling ZANU-PF party are not helping the situation.
It's a question of revenue collection. The government is not able to generate sufficient revenues in order to meet those costs. We all know that at the moment it's struggling. There have even been rumors that they wanted to issue bond papers as bonuses, but a bond paper is going back to the printed Zimbabwe dollar, so it doesn't work. What does it mean? It means that the economy, which is shrinking, cannot generate sufficient revenues in order to meet government expenditures. That's all.
And what would an MDC government do differently in terms of reviving the economy?
First and foremost, the question is that are we able to put in place the necessary plan to revive the economy? Of course we do. Are we able to stabilize the economy? Yes, we do have the experience during the GNU. One of the key factors that has affected the ZANU-PF government is you have a huge bureaucracy which they don't want to shed off. Even with a research position which indicates that there are over 80,000 ghost workers, they don't want to give up those because those people are working for ZANU-PF as youth officers. Those people were employed illegally. Now, that blows the wage bill. And secondly, you have a debt which is unmanageable. And thirdly, you have an economic base which is not producing anything. You have a collapsing industry, you have no investment. So where do you get the money? So for us, those are the stabilizing measures that MDC will have to implement immediately.
Mr. Mugabe turns 92 next year in February. What impact is this having on the nation in particular and the potential investors in general?
Well, the general line of thinking is that you cannot invest in a 92-year-old. So the general outcry is that this man must retire for his own sake and for the sake of the country. To be honest, they want to see stability. And as long as there is a war within ZANU-PF about succession, there will be no stability, and therefore no one is interested in investing in an unstable environment.
That was Zimbabwe opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai of the Movement for Democratic Change speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe service. The United Nations says a decision by authorities in the Central African Republic to postpone Sunday's elections by 3 days is not a setback for the struggling country. UN spokesman Stephane Dujarric said Thursday that given the very delicate security situation in the country, it is important that the elections take place under the best possible circumstances. Voting for president and parliament was scheduled for this Sunday, December 27th, but it was changed to Wednesday, December 30th, after officials decided they needed extra time to organize the vote. The Central African Republic government has said it did not have enough means to protect voters, especially outside the capital, Bangui. Earlier this month, French and UN peacekeepers helped safeguard polling places in a referendum for a new constitution. This year, Africa saw elections, attempted coups, constitutional changes, and peaceful transfers of power from Burundi, which is still dealing with violence and unrest after its president decided to run for a third term, to Tanzania and Nigeria, which both saw peaceful transitions of power. 2015 was a year of setbacks and gains for democracy on the continent, VOA's Jill Craig reports from Nairobi.
2015 was a year of ups and downs for democracies across Africa. Nigeria saw its first democratic transition of power in April, when former General Muhammadu Buhari defeated incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan. The polls ended 16 years of one-party dominance. In Tanzania, President Jakaya Kikwete stepped down after his constitutionally mandated two terms. John Magufuli was peacefully elected in October after a spirited campaign. Benji Ndolo is the founder and director for the Organization for National Empowerment One.
The new President Magufuli, he's just started on a wonderful, wonderful note, full of energy, full of optimism, full of action, less talk. So this, again, is very heartening, especially for countries like Kenya that are just next door and for the region. Uganda goes to elections in about another month and a half.
Burkina Faso dodged a coup attempt in September and went on to elect the country's first new leader in 27 years. It was a successful end to the transition after mass protests ousted longtime president Blaise Compaoré in October 2014. Sociologist Fahiraman Rodrigue Kone from Ivory Coast. He says what we see in terms of democratic progress is the rise of a responsible society, what he calls a society of citizens. He says the quality of the political offer also depends on demand, and that is the missing link that he says is emerging. But for these highlights, there were also lows. Burundi descended into chaos in April after President Pierre Nkurunziza made his bid for what critics say is an unconstitutional third term in office. After a May coup attempt, protesters taking to the streets, and bloody police crackdowns, Nkurunziza was re-elected in July under a haze of suspicion. Nearly 200,000 people have fled the country, and still the violence continues, as it has in South Sudan, where tens of thousands have been killed and more than 2 million forced to flee their homes since civil war flared up 2 years ago. Supporters of both President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar have accused each other of violating a ceasefire agreement. Protests turned violent in the Republic of Congo this past year as President Denis Sassou Nguesso held an October constitutional referendum to remove a two-term limit and the age ceiling of 70. He won with 92% of the vote, raising suspicion among international observers. And in the Democratic Republic of Congo, President Joseph Kabila is accused of postponing the presidential election, originally set for November 2016, and attempting to amend term limits. Rwanda voted a resounding yes with 98.4% of the vote in a recent constitutional referendum to allow President Paul Kagame to run for a third term in 2017 and possibly two more after that. 2016 will be another test for African democracies, with key votes expected in at least nine countries. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
For the first time, a Malawi band has been nominated for a Grammy Award, and not just any band. This one is a little new music group in Zumba Maximum Security Prison. Its song, I Have No Everything Here, was recorded in prison in January and has been nominated for the Best World Music Album. Lamek Mansina went inside the prison to meet with the group and also check out their performance.
This band was formed in 2008, largely to entertain inmates at Zomba Maximum Prison. This was in addition to the Malawi Prison Brass Band. Acting Chief Commissioner of Prison, Lidu Dinizulu Ntengamo, says the band came into being when he bumped into a group of musical young prisoners.
When I visited the Zomba Central Prison, I saw some boys playing local-made guitars from empty gallons or so ever, and they could play music. And once they start playing music, there was an attraction of prisoners coming out from their cells to listen to this music. I said, no, let us improve this.
He proposed funding from the National AIDS Commission for the musicians to start composing songs about HIV awareness messages.
They gave us 500,000. Where we bought three electrical guitars, a set of drums, and a very small speakers. Oh, the guys were very happy. And we started composing a HIV/AIDS-related awareness campaign music inside the prisons.
This led to authorities giving the band additional funds to buy more musical instruments. A prison officer, Lines Kaunda, is the deputy leader of the band. She says the nomination was a surprise to everyone at the prison.
We were not expecting it, especially when this American man came to record our music. We were suspicious of his motive. We were not sure what he wanted to do with our music and where he wanted to take it. We only allowed him to record us because it was an instruction from authorities.
Band member Ernest Kufandiko was sentenced in 2009 for theft. He says the nomination confirms that a prison is a reformatory center and not a dumping ground.
And they should not expect that we will be leading our previous lifestyle once we are released. What they should know is that we have learned skills that once released, they will know that these young men have indeed changed.
The 20-song album was recorded in 2013 by visiting American Grammy-winning producer Ian Brenner, who later gave it international exposure. Prison authorities say the band will not attend the award ceremony in Los Angeles in February. Instead, they say a government representative may go on its behalf. But whoever represents them, the band members say they will win the award. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Zomba, Malawi.
It's now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. The outcome of the case between Liberia Football Association President Musa Hassan Bility and FIFA will be announced on the 31st of December. The Court of Arbitration in Sports, CAS, announced in Lausanne, Switzerland on Thursday. FIFA declined to clear Bility to stand for the FIFA presidential elections due on the 26th of February next year. Bility then lodged an appeal with CAS seeking to reverse FIFA's decision. CAS is the highest arbitrator in all sports disputes, and their ruling is binding on all parties. In Zambia, veteran Christopher Katongo and Isaac Chansa have been recalled to the Zambia national team Chipolopolo. The team manager Lusekelo Kamwambi told the Lusaka media. Kamwambi says they will bring valuable experience to Chipolopolo's campaign at the African Nations Championships due in Rwanda next month. Katongo, who was dropped from the team a year ago, is reinstated as team captain, while Chansa returns to the side after a two-year absence. After plying his trade outside the country for more than 10 years, Katongo is back with his employers, the Zambia military side Green Buffaloes, while Chansa, who also played outside the country for over a decade, now turns out for Zesco United. Katongo and Chansa were key players in the Zambian team that won the 2012 Orange Africa Cup of Nations. Meanwhile, the Algerian under-20 side will host their Tunisian peers in a second friendly match in the capital, Algiers, tomorrow Saturday. The two sides drew 1-1 in their first encounter in Algiers on Wednesday. Finally, in boxing, Ugandan Edward Shaka Kakembo steps into the ring to fight Nigerian Waidi Skoro Usman for the Africa Boxing Union featherweight title in Lagos, Nigeria, tomorrow Saturday. The bout is the highlight at the GoTV Boxing Night event. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a Merry Christmas. Back to you, James, in Washington.
And thank you, Mark. Merry Christmas to you and your family, too. And you have a very good weekend. We'll see you on Monday. And that's it for this Friday, December 25th, Christmas Day edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post-editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you and your families a joyous Christmas and a very good weekend.